evil is the destruction of freedom. And we've been studying symbology for the last few months, really. We've done quite a few episodes on various aspects of studying symbols and symbolism. And just recently, there's a huge development. If you've been to cubbyhole.com, if you've ever seen the work of Nate Kapp, I'm very thankful and glad to have Nate with me tonight. He recently released Earth Brain 3, which is, almost 6 hours packed full of some of the most important studies on symbology that you can see. And so thanks so much for joining us today, Nate. I'm glad to have you.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, I've really been appreciating your work, and I'm hoping other people will check it out if they haven't yet. But you're one of my top-tier folks I like to go to for studying symbology. And so I thought maybe first you could kind of help folks out, like, why is symbology so important to the truth seeker?
Well, it's a really great question. It's a very vast question. And I would just say that it's very important because symbolism is in our everyday. And, you know, we're using symbols, whether we know it or not. And the more we become aware of symbolism, the more that we can, you know, understand, you know, the world that we live in and have more of an appreciation for it. And also to be aware of how symbols are being used to manipulate and control people. And I think it's very important that people become aware of the fact that they're using symbols in their language. You know, words are bundles of symbols. Every letter of the alphabet is a symbol. Every number is a symbol. You and I, each human being is a symbol. We're archetypes. You know, we are beings that can, you know, contrast each other. And because we're each human beings, and we can see our differences, we can see our similarities. That's how you measure and compare and contrast symbolism. And I think that if people became conscious of that very simple thing, it would be, you know, a much more of an awakening, much more of a people would have more clarity on, you know, their surroundings, and therefore we wouldn't be so easily targeted to be manipulated and you know, controlled. And I think that's the other thing, is people don't even look into whether they are manipulated or controlled. And some people believe that we are, but then don't care to actually look into it any further. But we are being controlled, especially through subversive symbolism. And, you know, once you look into that and understand that, you know, there are people who understand symbols very well and how they work on the subconscious mind, these people understand that they can manipulate people from, you know, a very unseen realm, if you will. And it's because they're working with the subconscious mind by understanding that the subconscious mind is the mind that is probably not going to be conscious of these types of things like symbols, because, you know, people have been raised in a world where symbolism is just kind of, you know, shooed away. Symbolism is looked at as like a supernatural thing, or it's part of witchcraft, or it's part of something to do with what we've been programmed to think as like a Hollywood variant of how symbols are used. And because of this, people are so confused on, you know, the workings of this universal language. And that's what symbols are. Symbols are just part of a universal language that is built into the fabric of the universe for us to discover and for us to use and communicate with each other and the universe itself. And But, you know, people are using these symbols, you know, from, you know, a very unseen realm, meaning that people are working from the shadows who understand them, and they are using them to manipulate people's minds to go in, you know, whatever direction they want them to go. And they do this through media. They do this through public education. They do this through so many different forms of different social systems. And, you know, the more that you look into that, the more that you look into the mind control or look into the social manipulation going on in the world, the more that you start to really see how symbols are used and how it's not the symbol that itself that is the bad thing, though. And, you know, that's where a lot of people also get caught up, is they get caught up in the, you know, the minutiae of symbols being associated with evil. So they, therefore, they are evil, you know, like the swastika, for instance. You know, these symbols are just neutral. They can be used for good, you know, wielded for good or wielded for wrongdoing. And because of this, you know, this is why symbols need to be understood. Because if you can become conscious of how symbols work and the workings of symbols, you can avoid being manipulated by how they're being used against you and others. So that's how I would phrase that.
And hugely important, because the grand picture of today's world is there is a heavy dose of authoritarian structures, whether you're talking about corporate or countries or even central agencies trying to become a global, you know, authority. There's definitely that push in the world. And so even though some folks have doubts about what's going on in the picture and there's different ways of seeing things, one thing I've noticed that I really appreciate about symbology and understanding things in terms of like correspondence, I guess, is where the idea I'm really trying to get at here, as above, so below. And I had this kind of weird realization when I was young. It's almost like a realization you'd have on mushrooms, but I wasn't. I was about 14 years old, and I was just looking at this little dot on the ceiling. And at that moment, that little dot on the ceiling was a metaphorical representation of the thought I was having. And then I was like, oh, everything is a symbol of everything else. And, you know, you can find a symbol for anything, which right. is sort of an amazing thing about reality in our brains, if you let that settle in. And so I guess it's a big thought. It's hard to struggle with, but I guess what I'm getting at is, I think, understanding this idea of correspondence and that hermetically, the way reality is built, everything is sort of a reflection of everything else. And even though some concepts or ideas are bigger than what we can actually see or research, we can understand things about the unknown by extrapolating from what we do know. Maybe you can make some more sense out of what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, symbolism is the science of correspondence. And this is something I've talked about a few times in my work, is what I refer to as the hermetically versatile mind. And this is basically just understanding these hermetic principles, these seven hermetic principles in particular, where, you know, once you have an understanding of each principle, it becomes a lot more, I wouldn't say, you know, I mean, it becomes more simple to understand symbolism for one, but it becomes more, it opens up this whole world of the occult to be able to look at symbols and correspond them and understand the polarity within them and understand how to, you know, bring knowledge to them, because they are a form of information. And so, you know, hermeticism is so key to unlocking symbolism and studying symbols. And, you know, it really, it's about developing the mind to be able to look at symbols and to entertain ideas around symbols and, you know, to overlay ideas onto symbols. You know, one of the things that I try to help people understand about how to look at symbols or how to use hermeticism with symbols is I just say, you know, focus on a symbol. Really, really focus on it. And, you know, for instance, like, I don't know, the circled dot or the triangle with the eye in the center. If you just focus on that symbol and keep on focusing on it, keep researching just into that symbol alone, you will start to see that symbol show up more in your life. You'll start to see it more in, you know, in all different areas that you are experiencing. And the reason that is because, you know, what you put your focus onto, there will be more of that. And so, you know, these symbols like the circle dot or the triangle with the eye in the center are extremely important. They're not just symbols. They're talismans. They're seals. They are carrying so much knowledge because they're like libraries, you know. So, you know, if you ever go to a library, you know, what do you do in the library? You go there to study. You go there to find books to pull out and study. You know, that's the main idea. And when you do this, you're trying to find answers. I mean, if you're an investigator, I mean, you can go there to be entertained by the stories, but also, like, if you're an investigator, if you're trying to find the truth, you can go to the library and you can find all kinds of knowledge in one place. Well, that's how symbols are, or talismans. If you're going to a talisman or a symbol, it's like a library where you're bringing books to that symbol, to that information, and you're bringing books that are about that symbol and everything about that symbol. So that way you have more of an understanding just how simplified all that information is and how it can be stored into one image. And, you know, and having that hermetic mindset while you're, you know, doing your studies, that can be such a huge help with recognizing how much a symbol can have stored within it. But also, the more that you become familiar with a symbol, the more that you can actually begin to understand what other people are doing with that same symbol. And so that's where you start to become conscious of, you know, manipulators in this world, but also other people, other great, people who've actually put forth a lot of knowledge into a symbol, how they've packaged it with, you know, for progeny and posterity, for people to discover in the future, so they can actually have, you know, some kind of chance at understanding the world that they live in.
Yeah. And that process of discovery, you know, partly I try to encourage our audience to work on their own content creation process, because there's nothing like putting together a presentation to really hone that skill and one's understanding of whatever the topic, like you're saying, when you focus on something and you really dig in. And when you were talking about that, it reminded me of a game I used to play with my kids. It was called, everybody's probably heard of I Spy, right? Like, I spy with my little eye something blue or whatever, right? Well, this game was called I Spy, and then it was like a matching game. And so all the pieces that you would match, instead of like the simplistic ones the kindergartners get, like it might be a yellow comb, but there would be a bunch of other stuff in the background. And then on the other tile that had the yellow comb, it would be like a difference. It would be scaled to a different size, and there would be different other things in the background. So it made it a little more challenging to find the two yellow combs because the backgrounds were different and they were shown at a different perspective and zoomed, you know? And so it was a good brain challenge, but that's very similar to what I feel like we're talking about here, is that there's a lot of dissimilar things in life. And then it's confusing when we hear people talk about different things and call this a truth and that a truth. Well, how do we, you know, if we are truly a truth seeker, how do we discern? How do we tell the difference? How do we cut the wheat from the chaff? You know, I think there's a real power in learning these levels of hermeticism, as you're describing, how to cut angles and see, you know, when you cut a 60 degree angle, that leaves a 30, you know, out of a 90. You know, for me as a carpenter, like on a saw, there's set points, a 30 degree, a 22 and a half, a 45. These are very specific numbers that mean very specific things in terms of building a product, you know? So when you understand the angles, which is the symbol, what we're talking about, then you can learn how to craft bigger ideas and work on bigger projects. So I think what I'd like to maybe you can help our audience out with next is this idea of the power differential. In our world, how does this understanding of occult, I'm calling angles, whether it's knowledge of the heavens or knowledge of times of history and things that have passed, how does this knowledge differential really give power to those in power now, or how can it give us more power as individuals?
That's a really great question. There's a lot that can be said about that. Now, I would just say this. You know, one of the things I talked about in my Earth Brain 3, which was this symbol of the pyramid, and you know, the three-dimensional symbol of the pyramid, and I have I'm showing a line going right down to the middle of the square of the base of the pyramid, and at the top would be, you know, symbolized by the those who have the knowledge, those who have the information that the others below them do not have. And because they have this knowledge, they can basically compartmentalize that knowledge to where different parts of the control system, you know, that go further down in degrees of the pyramid, those people have different parts of the knowledge, but they don't have the whole picture. Only those at the very top have that whole picture. And, you know, I even call these people the R-complex dominators of the world, because that's what they're really operating from. They're high-level you know, controllers through having knowledge that no one else really has. And one of the things I talked about in that presentation also dealing with that is the word news, which is an acronym for all the different directions. And so you have north, east, west, and south. That's what news, the acronym for news, would stand for. And so that means that, you know, when you're getting your news or you're getting your information, it's to basically keep you, your mind, or the masses going in all different directions. It's to move the mind in all different directions at any time they want, because they have all this knowledge. They have all the information. And so when you look at the word media, which is the news, the mainstream media news, media means medium. And medium is the center, okay? That's what medium stands for, is the center. So they're controlling the center. And if you're, you know, also familiar with any of the symbolism that I've been, you know, covering regarding the spirit, the spirit is at the center. You know, when you're talking about the square with the point in the middle, where you find the X. So to have basically wielding power over an X symbol, especially with in the mainstream media, I think a lot of people are familiar with the X. The middle of the X represents spirit. So they are literally controlling the spirit and keeping everybody in a material minded direction. So keeping the mind in news is keeping the mind in a material mindset. Okay, going in all different directions, but never going to the center, never trying to discover the center. Because if you try to discover the center, that's where you're going to discover spirit. And when you discover spirit, that's when you're going to realize that this whole control structure is, you know, it's there to keep you and everyone else oppressed. It's to keep you and everyone else looking outwardly. And so when it comes to, you know, the dominators of this world, they want control. It's the R complex at its highest form with knowledge. So, you know, when you combine knowledge with people who are, you know, ultimate psychopaths and even secondary psychopaths, you're basically, you know, in a world where there is this absolute dominance, because not only are these people willing to, you know, have other people killed or murdered or, you know, destroyed or enslaved, they are withholding knowledge that could actually empower people and, you know, bring people together. Because that's one of the things that a lot of people don't understand, is that the reason that things are so bad in this world is because everything is compartmentalized, which means that it causes division. So the more division you can have over people and their minds internally and externally, the more power you can have over pretty much everyone. And so that's why the news is such a huge, huge topic in and of itself, the media, because we have to take that back. You know, I mean, that's why we have to bridge ourselves together, because we're being systematically divided on all fronts. And it's because of this, you know, control of the center. And so the more that we learn the center, that's why I'm really trying hard to push all this knowledge out onto the table, the round table of the circled dot symbol and the cone symbol and the X symbol, is because there is a center mark. And that center mark is spirit. It's the thing that they're controlling. It's the thing that they're not allowing us to get to, because they know that if we discover spirit, that will be the way that we, you know, come back together. And when we come together, we become a very, very strong species. We become a very, that's where evolution takes place. As long as we stay divided and don't understand symbolism, we'll just continue to be, you know, have our minds go in all different directions and stay divided, and therefore always at war. And, you know, we will never see any kind of real harmony in this world.
It kind of reminded me of the Dark Crystal, you know, have those, the Skeksis, right? Skeksis, and then I'm blanking out on the names of the other guys that were the other half, but basically in the end, when the crystal's repaired and the two opposing creatures come together and they're like a more powerful being and they can all work together now. And that's kind of like where we're at, you know, like the powers that be, whether as hard as they may be to identify, have pitted us against one another. And it's funny, while you were talking, I was also thinking about a baseball game, because, we're trying to find the bases, you know, we're trying to base ourselves, right? And they're all in a square too. They call it a diamond, but it is a square. It's three bases in the home.
That's right.
You know, and we're like at bat, right? We're trying to get with the ball, right?
Right.
But they're going to be throwing us curveballs because that's what the news does. It throws us curveballs. And they're playing the center, like the pitcher. They're pitching us the things we want to focus on. So we're stuck just swinging at bat, you know, and trying to hit curveballs and knuckleballs all day long. It's going to be pretty hard because we don't understand the game that they're playing. They got us manipulated on two different teams or three different teams or whatever, where we don't need to be. So that's, you know, really powerful. And it points towards, you know, something I've been talking about. I forgot if it was last week or the week before. I did a presentation on the tree of life. The tree of life has always been a symbol that I love. I have it right behind me on my End Evil podcast. I try to put it on all my thumbnails because it really symbolizes that power that you're touching on of interconnectedness. And this is something we have within us and without us, an ability. And I think there's indications in history that humans have done a better job of being in alignment with how to understand and achieve more with this tree of life symbol and how to work together, how to be integrated. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on the tree of life and integration.
Well, yeah, another enormous
topic. I don't throw little questions. I only have huge, crazy questions.
Yeah, no, that's fine. It's all good. I love
I know you can feel that because you're such a good hitter.
Well, you know, not always, but I appreciate I appreciate your confidence in me. Well, you know, when it comes to the tree of life, I think, you know, it is such a valuable corresponding symbol in and of itself. And because, I mean, there's so many beautiful aspects to the tree. I know, for one, just think about the name tree. You know, just as a phonetic word, tree is three. So, you know, it's about understanding that the tree is about going to the roots first, because, you know, in order to understand the rest of the branches and the leaves and the upper part of the tree, it's about learning foundations. And so the roots are in the foundations. And going into, you know, and this is something I've talked about quite a bit on the cubbyhole, is going into the underworld is such a huge, huge subject, because you're dealing with what's called eschatology. And eschatology is dealing with final things. And when you're trying to understand this upper part of the world that we can all see, like, for instance, we all see the tree, we can all see the limbs and the branches and the trunk, but what we don't see is the roots. And so symbolically, when we're, you know, going through our spiritual journey to discover who we are and why we're here, what's the purpose, we're trying to get back to origins. We're trying to get back to the roots of things, because we're trying to understand what this tree really is. Because on the surface, it's just like, oh yeah, that's just a tree. It's the thing that gives us oxygen, and it's the thing that gives us shade, and it looks beautiful. There's different types of trees. But if we think of ourselves as a tree, and, you know, think of ourselves in alignment with, you know, seasons, think of how the sun affects the tree in the daytime sky. Well, you know, when the sun is going down from our perspective on Earth, when the sun is going down into the earth or under the earth, or, you know, however you want to look at that, it's symbolic. You know, you're not supposed to take that literal. But the point is, you know, when the sun is going from the daytime sky, this is supposed to be the literal you know, place where we can, you know, have our five senses and see everything. But when the sun goes below that horizon line and creates the night sky, the sun going below the earth is supposed to represent our journey to discover those roots of the tree. And also it's about understanding that, you know, this is the place of the winter solstice as well. You know, if you're talking about the annual cycles, you know, because you have day cycles and then you have annual cycles. And it's important to understand that, you know, the roots are, you know, when the tree seemingly, you know, quote unquote, dies in the winter, around the winter solstice, because it loses all its leaves, the leaves leave the tree. You know, that's the reason, there's a reason they're called leaves. So when they leave the tree is basically bare. And going down into the sun, going below the earth, this is supposed to, in ancient Egypt, this would represent Amenta. And of course, you know, this is the sun is also called Osiris in the solar mythos. And so as the sun is going down, this is supposed to represent the self going down into the roots of the tree, going all the way down to the ends and really learning the whole foundation of this tree, going down into the depths of the dirt, down into, you know, in ancient Egypt, it would be Kem, the land of the dark land. And so it's about going down into the, you know, the absolute roots of this tree of self. And this is where we would do our shadow work. This is where we would, you know, really, you know, be touching on the depths of the self. And this is also associated with the depths of water as well, because we're dealing with elements. And I know I might be saying a lot here, but it's important to understand the elements with the tree of life, because the tree is sitting in the element of earth, or it's based or rooted in the earth. And then of course you have to have the water for that tree to grow. So you have your two elements, your two inverted triangles. And so you're going down below this tree in order to of self, in order to go all the way into these roots, going all the way back into origins, to really understand as below, to which is likened to that which is above. Okay, that's why the tree, like you have in your background, that's why it's very similar. It's reflected in a very similar way. And so as we learn that, this is where, you know, this is the idea where, you know, this tree can grow good fruit, you know, and that's the same with the self, you know, to when the sun comes back around going through the winter, where there's no more leaves, the roots are still alive, the tree is still alive, but now it's going to be reborn again with, you know, bearing new leaves. You know, it's green, it's raising to the sun, it's growing fruit. Maybe it's an apple tree and or orange tree, maybe has lots of flowers. And that's supposed to represent our being, you know, in the spring, raising up as like the hero of the self, to be raised with the spirit, because we've done all the shadow work in the roots of the self. We've faced everything down below, and now we're reflecting that back into the now the material self, or the material body. Then that's how I understand it. And, you know, there's so much that goes into this amazing tree of life symbol. I mean, it's, and one of the other beautiful science is the Kabbalistic tree of life. You know, this is where you can really, you know, if you're studying with tarot, this can really, really open up a whole beautiful understanding of how this tree of life really works. But I mean, that's another enormous topic.
Yeah. And they're beautiful topics. And that's partly what we're trying to do is inspire listeners to, you know, kind of open these doors to a wonderful world of realizations. And it can be very joyful to realize things and to think about things on levels you've never thought about them before. And symbols are a way to bridge that gap of understanding, as you were saying. Like the main thing we're usually talking about is working on ourselves. How do I align myself with the type of actions I want to see in the world? And that we do have this material world where we can see what's happening in the physical realm, but how do we get in touch with the things we can't see? And that's what I think you're talking about that's so beautiful with the subconsciousness. It's like our roots, right? Like, what brought me to here? Why did I wind up in this position? How did I, what choices did I make? Or what choices did my parents and their parents before them make even that might have played into where I'm at now?
That's right.
And so there's so much, and I do want to get a little bit into some ancient history stuff, but I just kind of wanted to stop right there and pause a little bit, because like that's one of the most important points, is that it's about knowing ourselves. And you said it beautifully, the tree can represent yourself. And so, you know, understanding your roots, trying to figure out where you come from at, where are you right now on your hero's journey, you know, and so you get that into perspective, you can kind of orient yourself to the bigger world around us and what's going on in it, and kind of somewhat separate the other two, get some kind of objectivity. So I was hoping maybe you could talk a little bit about the word orientation and how you've been presenting that word, because I think that really kind of focuses in what we're talking about, the word orientation and how you've been explaining that.
Well, that's kind of synchronistic. Well, I wouldn't say it's completely synchronistic, but one of the things that I was saying about this tree being the roots being in the foundation in the dark, okay? Because one of the things I talk about is the right brain. The way that I presented it is, I made it black or dark. Okay. And that's always associated with the sacred feminine because it's receptive of light. And so the left brain would be then the light part of the brain or the white part of the brain. And so that's, I made that association because it's about understanding foundations. It's about understanding light and dark. And so you have your sacred masculine, which is light, and your sacred feminine, which is dark. But it's important to understand that, you know, when we're talking about darkness, we're also talking about the invisible realm. So we're talking about, you know, spiritual laws. We're talking about the unseen laws or the occult. And so in order to have strong foundations in our world, we have to face the darker aspects of self. And we also have to become conscious of these laws. That's how we, to become conscious of these invisible laws is to become conscious of natural law and the workings of natural law, especially. And what I'm getting at with this is that, you know, when you look at the tree of life, when you look at the roots in the, you know, like if you're looking at a circle and you're looking at the tree of life and you see the trunk is, you know, crossing this horizon line and the roots are down below, and then the leaves and the limbs and the twigs and the branches are all on top. This is so key to what I'm talking about, because if you think about right brain associated with spirit or the sacred feminine or darkness. Well, it's also associated with the foundation where the roots are. So this is dealing with soil. This is Chem, the land of Chem. This is soil. This is where the roots are, okay, of the self. Because we have to understand that our soul, our mind, our brain is basically the whole garden, the whole sacred garden. Okay, that's why you have these two trees in the sacred garden. But this tree of life is so powerful to understand when we're talking about orientation, because if you were to, you know, turn your head on its side, on the right side, you can look at the right hemisphere as the soil, okay? And then the roots of the tree are in the sacred feminine. This is the nurturing part of the roots, the dark part, the part that everyone's so afraid to go into because it's dark. People are afraid of the dark, but this is where spirit is discovered. And then, you know, the top half of the tree of life would be associated with the sacred masculine. Okay. This would be the material part. And when they're working in unison, you realize like, well, spirit really is material, and material really is spirit. And that's something that I think can really only be understood by someone who really cares enough to see it that way. It's not easy just to, you know, try to tell people that those two things are one and the same. But remember, we can't understand the one without understanding the two. That's the whole point of understanding things divided in order to understand them as a whole. So when it comes to orientation, this word orientation, just the word itself, is one of the most important, valuable words that anybody could ever discover or could ever, you know, understand very deeply. And the word means the direction east, the direction of the rising light. And so when it comes to orienting the mind, we must first put ourselves in a very elementary position of the mind, you know, something that can set, you know, reset our mind. There has to be a reset point or a starting point of orienting where we can start somewhere that makes sense, that we can grow from with everything else fitting into place. And so from my understanding, from my research, I discovered that orienting, you know, the direction east, and this is nothing new. I discovered this, but it's nothing new, because the word orient, whoever, you know, people who study the orient already know that, yeah, this is the direction where the sun first appears in the east. So facing that direction means you are taking your hemispheres, you're symbolically overlaying your hemispheres in alignment to the hemispheres of the earth. So facing the rising light, because that's the only way that it makes sense. It wouldn't make sense to face the west because there's no rising light. But when you face the rising light in the east, this is where you start to understand the alignment of the right brain to the south and the left brain to the north, which means that the sacred feminine is in the south and the sacred masculine is in the north. And when you orient your brain to this, now you start to understand the direction of self, that the soul is aligned to the soul, the sun. The sun is the soul. So you're putting yourself in alignment to the soul. And that's one of the most crucial things that anybody could ever come to understand, because we live in a world of materialism and people don't understand the soul. They don't understand spirit. And so this would be the first, when it comes to, orienting the self for everything else to make sense, I would begin orienting the mind to the east and understand the hemispheres, you know, right with south and left with north, because this is what's going to help us understand spirit in the south and material in the north. And this will really help us understand why our world has become so materialistic. So there's so much more to add on to that, but I just want to make that clear.
And, you know, like I said in the beginning, folks, Earth Brain 3, you want to get into these topics on a deeper level, start working your way through that presentation. And as far as that goes, get back to Earth Brain 2 and Earth Brain 1. Nate has done a colossal work helping us all kind of understanding these things, giving us some keys as a way to look at things. You know, what's striking me when you're talking, and I really liked in your Earth Brain 3 presentation how you know, I love aesthetics. And in your image, it was like a shadow on your face, and you're kind of even getting that now a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Where it was like dark on one side of your face and then light on the other. And it was like so much with the theme. And what I was talking about in the beginning, where I think symbols can be a struggle, or truth seeking in today's realm can be a struggle, because it's a world of polar opposites and it's a world of dichotomy. You know, it's a world of paradox. For instance, you talked about some of these things, but two different poles on the earth, right? We have hot and cold. Are they the two opposing things, or are they both elements of one thing that we call temperature? You know, right. So understanding symbology and the things you're talking about in terms of orientation inside of this realm we're in are ways for us to find some kind of solid ground to stand on.
That's right. You
know, instead of just getting, like I was talking about before, cyclically sent around the base thinking of the diamond of the baseball field, where they want you to be competing with everybody and just keeping your mind on this base, most simple things. And we're trying to say you can be illuminated. And right. So on that topic of illumination, a lot of people think about the Illuminati, you know, which we really know means becoming illuminated, the light, which symbolizes knowledge and information. And I've seen a lot of your work on Freemasonry. You've done some really beautiful work showing like some of the tracing boards, especially that first tracing board with the pillars, Joaquin and Joaz and Boaz, my bad, and the checkerboard and the ladder. And these symbols help us to initiate ourselves and begin this journey of self-exploration and to look at the whole where we are in the theme of things. And so on that note, whether it's Freemasonry or the Rosy Cross, right, Rosicrucianism, all through history, there have been these groups that have studied these types of things, going way back to, like, you're talking about the Stellar Cult, right? One of the oldest and highmost ones we can think of. And I think a lot of people, they get lost on the importance of all that. This, I'm going to call it historical philosophy history, helps us to understand where we're at now. So maybe you can just shine some light on the importance of why would we want to look back at things like Rosicrucianism or Freemasonry or different cults like the Stellar Cult. Why is that important?
Another enormous question, but I love it. I love it. This is the stuff that doesn't get talked about. And so it's, you know, these big questions have so much unpacking. So I'll do my best to simplify it. And these traditions that you're talking about, like Freemasonry or Rosicrucianism, these are mystery traditions. You know, Kabbalah is a mystery tradition. Runes is a mystery tradition. Hermeticism is a mystery tradition. There's so many different mystery traditions that we can use to help us go through this. And there's a reason it's called mystery tradition. Another mystery tradition is the King Arthur mystery tradition. A lot of people just don't understand how that could be a mystery tradition, but one of the aspects of King Arthur is the Mist of Avalon. And the fact that it's called the Mist of Avalon means you're going through the mist, because it's the mystery. It's my story. It's your story. It's every individual's story about discovering themselves, because it's about understanding that it's going to take you to penetrate that veil and go through, you know, the darkest aspects of self. And so what these mystery traditions do is they help the individual understand something that may sound a little bit religious, because a lot of religions do use a similar science. And the reason is because they're using something so elemental. They're using elementals, but then what happens is over time, the religions have this exoteric, control system mechanism in place, and where they're controlling all these, pagan sciences, all these nature cult sciences that have, you know, evolved over time and also become corrupted. And these religions begin to, develop because they've lost their, the people have lost their chronology. The people have neglected a lot of the sciences that have been, put forth by these ancient people who really cared a lot about when to plant and when to harvest, or, you know, how to understand yourself, how to understand, you know, the growth of self, how to look deeply within the self. And so then these religions come along and they have a lot of that beauty, a lot of the sciences encoded into their religions, into their teachings. And then these mystery traditions are basically holding on to all those sciences that can help us understand these, you know, major institutionalized religions and their teachings. And so, you know, Rosicrucianism, Gnosticism, even Freemasonry can all help us understand Christianity. And, when we're talking about Freemasonry, I look at Freemasonry as like the web of all esoteric systems. And that means that you can use Freemasonry in all mystery traditions and all religions, because you can, it has, you know, when you really get into the richness of the symbolism, you realize it's everywhere. But then you realize that all these mystery traditions are all interwoven with each other anyway, because they're all dealing with something very similar. And that is, for one, mystery traditions are more spiritual, because it's just really helping the individual understand themselves and develop the self. And that's what spirituality really is in a nutshell. It's just about, self-development. And So as you go further back into the mysteries, into, you know, the solar cult, for instance, the solar cult is a sun worship cult, a nature cult. It began as a nature cult, and then it has been highly corrupted, you know, in the past 40 to 70,000 years or so. And this is something a lot of people don't want to talk about because they get afraid of these big numbers of years. But, you know, once you start learning how to measure time cycles, it begins to make a lot more sense. And also paying attention to weaponry and the evolution of weaponry and the evolution of symbols and the just coming in contact with mythology and eschatology, that can really help us understand how to go further back into these ancient nature cults. And these are totemic cults. They're totemic. And so totemic means these are, when I'm talking about cults, you know, like the solar cult, there's the, cause you talked about the stellar cult, and the stellar cult is the first of the totemic cults, the totemic nature cults. And then comes lunar, and then comes solar. And I would say we are mostly in a solar cult collectively in the whole world, mostly in a solar masculine dominance worship cult. And because of this, this is what these mystery traditions can help us further understand, because they are preserving the myths, like Thelema preserves the myth of Osiris and Horus and Isis, and same with Freemasonry. The same with King Arthur to some degree, because we have to understand these mystery traditions are preserving science of the sun, the solar cycles. And, you know, that's what the zodiac is about. And the zodiac is a tracing board as well. So, you know, the tracing board, if people aren't familiar, or the trestle board is, you know, in Freemasonry, it's basically, I'll show it here real quick, but if I can get this down. These are tracing boards. Okay. And these are the first three degrees. Sorry if that's not coming up clear. I'm trying, but
no, that's okay. I might even just put in a slide right there.
Okay.
It helps. Yeah.
Yeah, but these are
that's beautiful.
These are the first three degrees of esoteric Freemasonry done by Josiah Bowring. And Josiah Bowring is, I really have a lot of respect for Josiah Bowring because, well, for one, I'm probably a little biased because I've studied his boards more than anybody else's boards, but I've studied other artists' boards. And these are men who really cared enough to store symbols that lead to the understanding of the sciences that are stored within or associated with the symbols that can help us understand our own journey of the soul, but then to help us go further back in understanding solar cycles or lunar cycles, to care about solar cycles and lunar cycles, and then to go even further back to realize, oh, there's also stellar cycles. And I think that would be more evident in the solar mythos because, you know, you're dealing with the zodiac, and every house of the zodiac, every house stores the constellations that are associated with each house. And so when you study those constellations and how they go, how they're tied in with the sun, that's really important. But then to go even further to realize that there is a circumpolar constellation, which is referred to as the Little Dipper or the Little Bear. And this constellation is a constellation of seven stars, and the tail of the Little Bear is connected to Polaris, the pole star. And this, the importance of this cult, of the stellar cult or the stellar mythos, this totemic hero cult, the importance of this is that we maintain an understanding of a 26,000 year cycle between glacial epochs, meaning that, you know, I guess probably around 14,000 years ago is when the last glacial period happened, the last ice age. And then we're going to probably go into another one here in the next, you know, 12,000 to 13,000 years. And so I think we're right in the dip. We're right in the bottom of the U. And so we're, you know, this is, we're at a what would it be called? Like a threshold almost. You know, where we're, you know, it's so hot right now, but then it's going to start cooling off here in the next 12,000 years or so. And so the importance of this stellar science is that we are paying attention to the pole stars that the Earth's pole, you know, the Earth has this obliquity wobble to it. And it's rotating in a wobbly way, but the pole ends up going through around seven stars, not necessarily the seven stars of the Little Bear, but they go through seven stars. And the Little Bear is so important because it's made of seven stars. So that way you can find your way. That's the importance of the Little Bear, to help you find your way to your North Star, to help you find your way to symbolically what would be referred to as the Most High. And so it's a very big deal, because we've been cut off from that knowledge. We've been cut off from that knowledge also through the lunar mythos. And so, because we have to understand this, the stellar science was passed on into the lunar phase. And the lunar phase, the light of the moon is supposed to represent the light of the stellar, the light of the stars, the light of the Little Bear. And then we get confused later on and forget that light, because we literalize everything, and we get confused and forget that light comes from the stellar, and we start associating that light with the sun, because the sun is the literal light of the moon. And so I can understand why this can sound so interesting to someone, but also sound so confusing, because we have to use these mystery traditions in order to help us find our way back home to the stellar.
Yeah, all that light gets kind of heavy in the mind.
Yes. Yes,
it's not exactly just lightweight. What I got to thinking about was the idea of myths and mythos. You know, you're talking about these different groups over time, these different mystery schools have created various types of code. And it's almost like, you know, the Rosetta Stone. When people discovered the Rosetta Stone, they knew about several languages, Akkadian or whatever the other languages were, Hebrew. But when they found the stone, it's like, oh, now we can put them all together. We can compare one to the other, and we can know this word in this language means that in that language. But without that stone to compare them, it was really difficult. And right. Imagine if we're starting from nothing right now. We're looking at the stars, the world, and we're trying to say, like, where are we? What is this? Well, that would be silly, because we have thousands of years of people that have done this work and studied these things and created names like Little Bear or Polaris, to give us like a map. And, you know, if you imagine a map, when you're driving your car and you look on the map, you know, it's just a little squiggly line. But then when you look up out, that's not really what you see in the real world. You see this big, wide plane. And so the map has within it also a key, right? And the key tells you like, oh, black lines that are straight mean roads. Lines, blue lines might mean a river. So this is kind of like what these mystery schools have done through time with myths. They've created stories that explain things, almost like the way we create a little song to remember something, right?
Right.
It's a way to understand things. And we're giving this to you. And there's never been a time in history where so much of this is available to you as a human being. These have been secret, hidden all through time. You're going to get killed if you spread these secret kind of thing. So many times in history, but right now Pandora's box is open, right? And we have it all at our fingertips, which is massively confusing because there's so much information and data that it'll blow you away.
Yeah.
But if we use these keys that people have created, we can orient ourselves. That's my way of interpreting
what you said.
I hope that helps people understand.
Yeah, man, you simplified it. I mean, we have to understand this, that the information that is stored, even in religions, okay, a lot of people are very quick to just want to throw away religions of the world. And I would say be very careful with that kind of mentality and attitude, because these religions are carrying remnants of the sciences of, you know, these great cycles that we live in. And
well, I've been doing those episodes on the parables of Jesus just for that reason. You know, I'm not trying to tell people you should be a Christian, not at all.
Right.
In fact, my story is I grew up in Christianity and I realized when I was like 17, 18, like, nah, I don't want to be associated with being called a Christian. But I appreciate a lot of these stories and what they mean. And I think personally, the differentiation is if you're telling a story to understand something, or you're listening to a story to understand a concept, that's beautiful. But what religions so often do, what makes them religions and why they're evil, is because they try to make you believe the story.
Right.
As if it's literal.
Yeah.
So now we're saying, oh no, there's actually a bear up in the sky. It's not the shape of a bear. No, it's a real bear. You know, it's like, that's silly. And it puts people down the wrong way of thinking. And that's why when we talk about a lot of things, it gets all conflated because people are thinking of literal. So it is actually, in my opinion, evil to tell a story as if it's true.
Yes.
And tell people, no, you got to believe this story. This guy actually said this thing. I'm like, no. These mystery schools, these wise people over time have studied these stories because they contain with them a code, a key to understand all things.
Right. Yeah. You know, I like to say that exoteric and esoteric are equally as important, because the exoteric is the story. That's how I look at it. It's the story. Like, the myth is the story. But then it's up to you, the individual, to go extrapolate the science out of that story, aka the esoteric, or the, you know, when it comes to myth, it's the same. It's the esoteric. It's the science. You're trying to extrapolate as much as you can what is surrounding that myth. Because as you, you know, like, this is why oral tradition is so important. Because when you're talking about, like, for instance, the myth of Osiris, when you start to esoterically break that down, you start to paint a picture of the science that is actually taking place. And a lot of people would not really understand what that means until you start to explain it from, you know, more of a the science of astronomy, you know, the science of you know, seeing how the science of the sun in its day trek, or its annual cycle, or even its glacial period cycle. Well, that science has been stored within the myth as a story, like Osiris. Osiris preserves the story of the sun and what the sun, you know, goes through. And then there's all these other, you know, things, additions to the story to help us understand that the sun is actually our teacher. The sun is teaching us, and we're just like, okay, well, the sun is teaching us this science. Well, how do we get everyone to understand this science together? Well, storytelling is so much more valuable than just telling everybody, well, the sun, you know, goes this way this day, and then it kind of goes a little bit higher this day and a little bit higher and a little bit higher. It's like, okay, well, that doesn't really stick with a lot of people. You know, it's very super left-brained. But if you can tie that left-brain science with right-brain storytelling, now you have a holistic perspective of, you know, the beauty of not only knowing when to plant and when to harvest, because it becomes this cycle of learning how to live on the planet. But then it becomes, oh, I'm seeing that the sun is actually teaching me the way in which birth, growth, decay, and death take place in the world. And what is death? Well, when you watch death from, you know, the fall equinox down through the winter solstice to the spring equinox, that whole dip of the sun going down to its lowest place in the winter solstice down in the southern hemisphere of Earth. Well, this is teaching us a lesson. This is teaching us a valuable spiritual lesson of the journey of the soul, to help us understand that, hey, don't be so afraid of death, because it's a, you know, we're going through these beautiful cycles, and we're not, it doesn't mean that we're bound to the cycles. It just means that we're on this beautiful, organic, orderly cycle throughout the whole universe, which is connected with all these other cycles. And therefore, if we learn how to harmonize with those cycles through these myths, which carry the sciences, that's where we'll start to see that, oh, there's something so much more to myself and others. There's so much more here. I don't have to be ignorant and not use my higher order thinking. I can actually, you know, develop myself, face fears, do the shadow work, and not live in such a our complex materialistic dominance of the mind, which is, you know, what most people are living in today, with putting, you know, money as the first priority, putting authority as, you know, the man as the highest authority rather than natural law. And then, you know, just putting any kind of material possessions over anything that is actually valuable in the development of self. And so that's what these great cosmic teachers are here to do, aka the sun, the moon, the stars, and the planets. They're all teaching us. They're beautiful teachers of self. And that's why, you know, when you study, you know, astrotheology, that's why you really start to understand how connected you really are and why those sciences are made into myths that have been passed down through these mystery traditions and then all the way into the corrupted religions that we see today. So it's very valuable science.
Yeah. And that, you know, I think I try to point out to folks that we tend to think of science as lab coats and microscopes, but we are scientists. In fact, what you and I are doing, trying to better understand symbols, is a science. We're trying different things, and then we're seeing which things consistently work, you know? This right here, I finally got my copies of the book, The End of All Evil.
It's awesome. And, great book.
You know, there's a guy who's selling these now, who's getting them reprinted. So if you're looking for a copy, his name's Brendan, but you can contact me and I'll put you in touch with him. But The End of All Evil book is, and Nate, you have like an original copy, right?
Yes. Yeah. My girlfriend got it for me and I'm so thankful.
Mind blowing. Because you looked that original thing up on Amazon and it's like $1,000 or $2,000 for a copy. Yep. I think I paid $9 or something for this one.
Yeah. What a steal, man. That's great. You know, having an original of any book is awesome, but just having that knowledge is so valuable.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, as far as practical takeaways for listeners, you know, there is a lot of work to be done in this world, and we have a grand opportunity in front of us to be part of this process of ending evil. You know, we were talking about the tree. I've often thought of our life as the moment which the leaf breaks free from the branch and falls towards the ground. You know, we hit the ground, we're grounded again. We're back to the soil. That's like death. You know, we're joined back with the earth. Yes. But this time we have right now, we're being lifted by the spirit of the air. And we're having the opportunity to feel like what it feels like to be individual, even though we are still a leaf, which is a part of a tree. We're having this opportunity to kind of free float. And so that means you can choose to take the initiative. You can grow your brain. You can use creative juice within you to, you know, inspire and to cultivate and to grow. So, you know, in terms of planting seeds and our enclosure, like you talked about, overstanding, understanding, maybe you can, we can kind of round this out and finish it up by, you know, kind of talking about how people can cultivate their garden, real physical world things we can do to grow like a tree and to be better and to help end evil, you know?
Yeah. I had a question real quick. Would it be cool if I just, you know, I got these books out and I just wanted to share them on your show
Oh, cool. Absolutely. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. So just some helpful books that I've used. I'm not doing very good with the camera, but Signs and Symbols. This book is just filled with amazing symbols, esoteric and exoteric. And of course, you know, the more you bring knowledge to it, the more will be revealed. The Magician's Companion by Bill Whitcomb. This is so valuable to anyone trying to understand sigils, talismans, just symbols in general. It's a wonderful, wonderful, helpful book. If you're trying to understand the mythos, Signs and Symbols by Albert Churchward, Signs and Symbols of Primordial Man, The Lost Language of Symbolism by Harold Bailey, excellent book. All these are excellent, but this one, I really love this book, The Book of Symbols. You can see it's extremely enormous, but it really gets into breaking down symbols in a way that it's exoteric mostly, but if you bring enough esoteric knowledge, it really starts to combine all that information in between. And it's just so vast. I mean, the more, you know, let it be. I mean, it's part of the journey.
Symbolism is
part of the spiritual awakening. And so I think having those books and enough knowledge, and there's so many other books, but those books have really helped me.
One of my shows I listen to has been getting me into Joseph Campbell, and I've been listening to A Hero with a Thousand Faces.
Yes.
And he gets into a lot of this ancient symbology in there.
Yeah, he's another amazing author, very important author when it comes to the journey of the soul, the hero's journey. So, but to you know, get into your question about agriculture, I think that is a huge correspondence, because when you realize that, you know, agriculture is, it's just, it's part of our being. It's something that we have to do, because if we don't do it, we will not survive as a species. I mean, I know that there's breatharians out there, or breatharians, people who can just live off of sun and air. Okay, that's great. And, you know, I applaud people who can do really neat things like that. But as far as the whole species and all the different, or the human species and all the different areas that we live on this planet, we do have to become conscious of agriculture. And I think that the more that we become conscious of the correspondence of the internal garden of self, it makes it that much more valuable. You know, because this is, you know, this is what I got into with culture as a way of cultivating, right? That's what culture means, to cultivate. And that's, you know, this is where this word cult also has an importance in understanding, because a lot of people don't understand, you know, like there's a modern understanding of what a cult is, and there's an ancient way of understanding what a cult is. But it's about more so understanding in today's climate, cults are basically violent gangs or violent groups or groupthinks. And that's a whole another topic. But when you're talking about cults in the ancient world, nature cults, you're talking about people who cared enough to, they cared enough about their garden, not just their internal garden, but their external garden. And they cared enough to cultivate what was going on internally within them, to grow something good, because they were aligned to natural law. They were, and I'm not saying every single person's aligned to natural law in the ancient world. I'm just saying that natural law is a very major factor in internal cultivation, because it's about reaping what you sow. So if you're sowing seeds of good into the world, if you're sowing seeds of, you know, if you're even, there, man, this one word I have not been able to remember tonight, but it's about, storing information. It's synonymous with that, but, you know, storing information for progeny and posterity, that is about sowing in hopes that people in the future have a fighting chance at, you know, either maintaining freedom or becoming free, or, you know, becoming sovereign or maintaining sovereignty. And that's what we're really trying to do, is we're trying to fight for our sovereignty. We're trying to cultivate good information, you know, through the trivium method, you know, putting that information in and having a good process, like tilling the soil and making sure that you're, that you got, that you're, you know, sowing your seeds right, you know, literally, and, you know, hoping that, you know, in the spring that they'll, you know, you'll have a good, a start to your, you know, your
harvest.
Well, your harvest in the future, but it's about, you know, making sure that that soil is cultivated, is tilled right in the fall, so that way, once it goes through the winter, it doesn't completely harden, and you have something to work with in the spring, in order to, you know, plant something that's actually going to grow and bring you good fruit and of course a good harvest. So, and I know I didn't really say that right
completely. No, you did a beautiful job, because that that is the perfect allegory and metaphor, or metaphor is probably a better way to put it, than most things we do in life are not done like with one big decision. You know, right. Oh, I'm going to start making a podcast. Yeah, right. You know, it's done by getting up every, you know, Thursday morning and actually creating that podcast and publishing it and putting it out there where people can get it, or whatever it is you're doing, a piece of art. You know, anyone can think of an idea, you know,
right.
But actually doing it, actually bringing that into the world is what Mark Passio calls wisdom. When right. you actually turn that into action. And that's what I called one of my symbology episodes. You know, when you actually go through the third gate, the magic mirror is the gate where you're just learning about yourself. And we can do that for infinity. But at a certain point, we have to step past our own self and think about, okay, in the context of this realm we're in here, what am I here to do? What is the purpose that I can put my steps forward? And so I think that is very practical for people, actionable. Most major changes and things that you do are done in little steps, just like the seeds. And like you were talking about tilling the soil, making sure the soil full of nutrients. And this takes time and persistence and going out, checking on every day, getting up with the sun, putting your soul and your heart into your projects. And then it comes to the other side at the end of the winter and spring comes around and yeah, things are blossoming and your friendships and relationships and groups you've been putting time into are starting to bloom. And people are starting to show up and watch your show, you know, or whatever it is you're trying to teach. That's so important. And that's what I'm trying to inspire listeners.
Right. Yeah. It's all about cultivating care, you know, because there is this, we live in a world now full of people who are apathetic. They have no care. And there's also the cremation of care. But what we're supposed to do internally is cultivate care. We're supposed to grow the care. And that's what makes us understand how responsible we are as human beings. We are supposed to be responsible. And we are in nature. We're responsible for what we do in this realm. And so the garden is meant to, you know, help us understand that we're not going anywhere. This is home. This is our foundation. Earth is our mother. It is our home. This is the place that we must learn, you know, and this is what I'm trying to teach with the checkerboard floor, you know, the black and white squares. Because once we learn our foundation, we must, for one, we're going to recognize that we're responsible for that which we stand on. And, you know, understand, standing under that foundation by understanding what is holding that foundation up. And spiritually, of course. You know, obviously you can understand that literally too. I mean, it's dirt underneath us. You know, it's roots underneath us.
I thought it was a big turtle.
Yeah, it's an upside down turtle. And it's like if we can cultivate these sciences. Okay, if we can cultivate care and to cultivate care enough to where we can actually start to build this world that we say we want, which is a sovereign world, a world where, you know, we're free, a world where slavery no longer exists. And, you know, and this is synonymous with the name of your show, to end all evil. That's our goal, is to in that evil internally within us. Because think about this, you know, evil means the green language is Eve is ill, and Eve is the sacred feminine. And so we have to heal that. That's the cultivation of care. We have to heal symbolically Eve, the sacred feminine. And so as we, you know, go through this dark part of ourselves, this black chem soil. And I keep referring to chem because chem is a foundation of our way back home, because you're dealing with these ancient Egyptian pyramids. That's where the land of Chem is. You're dealing with Lower Egypt and Upper Egypt, which correspond to the South Hemisphere and the North Hemisphere. And so, and you know, so you're dealing with spirit and material. And so the more that we learn this darkness within, the more we are going to have an appreciation for the agriculture of the world and realize like what it's really going to take if we really want freedom, what it's really going to take. Because think about it. And I take the position that the pyramids were built by stellar people. Okay. I don't take the position they were built by slaves. I take the position that these people cared so much for our evolution as a species and the agriculture of the world and the you know, understanding the epochs of time between the glacial periods, that they built those pyramids over thousands of years, and they, you know, cut those stones to perfection over thousands of years, because that's how much they cared and cultivated that care to help us understand we got to be really careful about what we venerate. And, you know, and then that's a whole nother thing. I know, you know, to open that up right now, I know you're trying that you got to get going, but I'm just saying that is really what it leads to. That is, there's a warning sign, and we can talk about that another time, but there's a warning sign that was built within those pyramids. And I'm telling you, it is one of the most important things that anybody could ever awaken to, because we have to realize that's how much care it's going to take in order to bring ourselves back into a harmonized world with nature.
That's beautiful, Nate. It does. Yeah, you're right. That is a whole giant ball of wax, but it is kind of like one of the last things I was hoping to touch on. And so it's perfect the way you did it, because I think this ancient history and the science of studying, you know, does point towards all these things on the earth that seem so mysterious. There's a message that was left, and you definitely get the indication. I do, through the work you've done, Douglas, and many others, even some modern archaeology folks who generally are not the mainstream, are showing that these somebody, somehow, some people, some beings in the ancient past kind of had their stuff together to an extent that we don't right now. They were able to do things and leave behind things that we still don't understand completely. But when we orient ourselves to some of the hermetic truths, we see that, yeah, it's a message of care and a warning for what can go wrong if we don't care. So, you know, that's a huge kick in the ass to everyone out there who's listening, that this realm you're in, this life you're living, it's not just ball games and ping pong and TV and whoops, you know, made another mistake. It's, we're here to do science. We're here to learn, and we're here to grow. And we have a spirit and we have a soul, and you have one of the newest technologies that the universe has to offer. So don't waste it. Don't waste your time here. Do something good with it.
And all said.
So yeah, let's close it there. Check out cubbyhole.com and evil.life. And any last words you want to share with our audience, Nate, I really appreciate your time and your words. Thank you.
Well, first of all, I really appreciate you having me on. I really, really appreciate all the work you've been doing regarding symbolism. And well, you know, all the work that you've put out, but man, some of your shows that I've been fortunate enough to watch have been really great. I think it's really wonderful what you're doing, bringing people together, having your round tables. I always enjoy those. And I really hope more people get to, you know, watch that material. And, you know, it's this kind of behavior to, you know, see, people don't even realize that just doing shows like this is helping further the education in yourself. So that's why, you know, I hope that we're inspiring those of you out there who will hopefully become activated and putting this type of work out yourself. So that way, not only will you, you know, start to learn this information better, but then you can, you know, this is one of the greatest ways that you can help get the message out. And of course, sharing this type of information. So, I hope that I came through well, with the things that I have shared. And, yeah, if you want to find any more of my work, you can go to cubbyhole.com and you can also listen to my Outcasting podcast. All that information can be found there. And, that being said, I really appreciate it, Chris. Your work is awesome and I'm very thankful to be here.
Fantastic. Great show, Nate. Much love. And folks, we'll see you next Thursday. Evil is the destruction of freedom.